In the days following the Brexit vote, you may have seen the headlines about turmoil on the financial markets, a reminder of how volatile markets can be. And elsewhere, not a lot of reassuring news. We want to hear your best tips for money management. What's your financial goal? Is it to save for a house, for retirement, to work less? What questions do you have about saving and investing? We have a financial advisor and author here to give advice. The number is to dial 1-800-825-5950 in the Lower Mainland, 604-669-3733 on your cell phone, star or pound 690. You can also tweet us at BC Almanac. Miley Wong is a financial advisor and author of the book Smart Risk, Invest Like the Wealthy to Achieve a Work Optional Life. She's in our Vancouver studio this afternoon. Good afternoon, Miley.
Good afternoon, Chris.
So your book is about investing to achieve a work optional life. That sounds pretty good. Is it for real?
It is.
Okay, how?
Well, it's all about learning lessons from the wealthy, as well as everyday people who have overcome challenges and applied a smart risk way of thinking to achieve this lifestyle whereby you don't have to necessarily go to work every day to have an income to pay for your lifestyle, but rather live off the income from a retirement nest egg that provides you regular, steady, sustainable cash flow in retirement.
How do you get that nest egg in the first place?
Well, I think it starts first with thinking differently about taking risks. You know, almost every day in my role as portfolio manager and financial advisor, I'm introduced to people approaching retirement and they're scared, tired, and confused. You know, they share these same fears about outliving their capital, not being able to maybe afford their current lifestyle, especially in today's volatile markets. And so, you know, when I was approached by a publisher who proposed this idea about my experience and having worked with investors across New York, Toronto, and Vancouver, and how I've been so fortunate to learn this smart risk way of thinking and helping clients apply this every day, I thought, what an opportunity to share this so that everyday people could use these tools and what I call the smart risk investing roadmap to actually achieve that.
As a neophyte, which most of us probably are, how do you tell the difference between a smart risk and a dumb risk? I mean, I know which one I'm more likely to come up with. How do you tell the difference?
Well, you know, it starts first with taking a step back and not letting the emotions just sort of cloud our judgment, right? Especially in a situation that's an important financial decision. Or you bring up Brexit as a recent event where, you know, all this stuff is happening and there's news coming at you from everywhere. It's sometimes natural to just want to make a knee-jerk reaction. And taking a smart risk is really about first trying to be proactive as opposed to reactive. And take a step back and evaluate the possible scenarios. Really, it's about looking at it from a purely objective standpoint first, and then comparing the different scenarios and the outcomes to our own personal tolerance for each outcome. So that's where the science and the art kind of come together before then taking that next step. And, you know, not every decision is going to work out in your favor, but over time and after several approaches to doing this in this way, it does continually stack the odds in your favor. And that's why that roadmap is so important.
Now, your book, which we have four copies, by the way, to give away to listeners, if you'd like to give us a call, 1-800-825-5950 in the Lower Mainland, 604-669-3733 on your cell phone, star or pound 690. The book is called Smart Risk, Invest Like the Wealthy to Achieve a Work Optional Life. And I've been reading reviews online, Miley, of the book, and the reviews are great. And they talk about the anecdotes you use to teach people about money rather than that, you know, the kind of dry numbers. Why did you choose that and why does that work?
Well, I find that in applying this and telling stories, real client stories of people who have actually applied this roadmap in everyday life, makes it that much more tangible and realistic for everyday people to be able to then turn this into value for themselves and apply it for themselves to, again, walk through this roadmap, which is a series of just five simple step-by-step guideposts. I call them the five P's to help you get towards that goal.
I wonder, maybe we could use an example to give some people some idea of specifics, because I understand this roadmap. I understand you don't want to give away everything that's in your book, but let's take, you know, one example from someone in the book and how their financial situation changed after applying this advice.
Sure. So one of the examples is a woman named Jessica. She was in her mid-50s, and she had inherited some money from her father, who was a very conservative type of investor and had a lot of fixed pensions. But when he passed away, she found herself with a lump sum of money and no real financial experience on how to move forward. Yet her job was very unstable, and so she knew that she would have to rely on herself and build up something that was going to provide her a sustainable source of income. But she was worried that if she went outside of her traditional way of thinking and stepped out beyond just a portfolio of GICs and term deposits, that she would be exposing herself to these great risks. So really her fear held her back. So what we did is we walked her through this process of first understanding the purpose for this money. You see, that's the first P in the roadmap is purpose. What does she need this money to do for her? And oftentimes we have lots of goals, right? You know, maybe buy a new house, a new car. But in her case, it was really about not outliving her capital. And in her case, she didn't have children to leave a big bequest to, so she really wanted sustainable income. So we identified that very clearly for her, and it took a lot of the sort of noisy options off the table. And then what we did is we looked at the second P, people. It's really important, especially when making these tough decisions and applying this framework, that you want to have people seated at your circle of trust. People who you can trust have a great deal of expertise making sound decisions, yet also have your best interests in mind. So oftentimes it involves, you know, bringing your, you know, tax advisor, your wealth advisor, your potentially a lawyer, or maybe a couple of really close friends and family members all together and having the discussions in a very open format about what your real priorities and purpose and goals are, so they understand and they're willing to step up for you.
If you'd like to join the conversation, ask questions of Maile, give us a call, 1-800-825-5950 in the Lower Mainland, 604-669-3733 on your cell phone, star or pound 690. Let's go to Heather now in Vancouver. Good afternoon, Heather.
Good afternoon.
What questions do you have?
Well, basically, I'm wondering about renting or buying. I'm 50. And my long-term rental is being sold, and I'm anticipating having to move out. And then I don't know if whether I should, you know, spend my savings on a down payment or continue renting at my age. I don't know. In Vancouver, it's obviously, you know, the situation.
Yeah, that's a harder question in Vancouver than it might be, say, here in Kelowna. Miley, what do you think?
So obviously the really hot real estate market, particularly in Vancouver, has been a topic of choice for a lot of us in terms of what to do. And you ask Heather whether or not you should, this is your primary residence, is that correct? Rent
yeah.
or buy?
So it's, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I think first off, you know, having this stability of your own place to live is a very important factor for a lot of us, especially as a woman in her 50s thinking about, you know, maybe now, you know, still 30 to 40 years of you know, life to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being cognizant of the fact of still looking at what's affordable within your means and mm-hmm. not putting all of your cash flow and investment necessarily nest egg into just the primary residence. I would also look at establishing, you know, an emergency fund and other sources of money available to provide cash flow that you will need for your daily living expenses. Mm-hmm. So what I often talk to with clients about is the idea of diversification and the idea that in Vancouver, housing oftentimes makes up a high percentage of one's personal net worth, but not to, to get too caught up in this whole fear of missing out in terms of the hot real estate market. But rather step back and look at what your alternatives are, again, through this smart risk approach. Realize and prioritize and plan what are your key objectives here. Is it to have a sustainable place to live that is going to be somewhere that you can continue to see yourself in for the next 20, 30 years? Or do you still plan to travel and, you know, in the next 10 or 20 years? And that way you may not necessarily have such a high priority on purchasing, you know, a residence here in Vancouver. Like with all assets, housing still can be prone to corrections. So it's important not to overreach and pay too much above one's affordability. So one of the other tips we would look at is if you're borrowing and taking out a mortgage in order to buy that home, think about, from a smart risk perspective, how much you can afford in a mortgage and therefore towards the home if interest rates were actually to increase over time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're currently in a very low interest rate environment. And when you get events like Brexit and some of the recent turmoil, that does tend to create an environment that suggests lower rates for longer. However, taking a step back in the bigger picture again, recognizing that sustainable growth is built on a strong foundation, we want to be mindful of the fact that over long periods of time, we are experiencing record low interest rates. And therefore, to protect yourself, Heather, having a financial safety net in place includes thinking about whether or not you would be able to afford your mortgage if interest rates were to move higher.
Heather, I hope that helps. We have other callers stacked up here. Let's go to Carrie, who's on the line in Vernon. Good afternoon, Carrie.
Hello. Howdy. I was just tuning into the program there, and it sounds interesting. We'll be approaching retirement shortly. Used to work for a utility in the province here, and it changed its operation. So I will have a bit of a pension from them. It's locked in until I reach 65, I guess, and have some RSPs and those kinds of things. And I guess I was just looking for some general advice on cash flow management as you approach retirement. Kids are grown. They've gone and left the house. We've got a place that's close to a school, and we should probably sell it and move someplace else and let somebody with kids live here, you know?
Carrie, I think it's probably a pretty common situation you're in, and maybe more common in the Okanagan than other places in BC. Miley, any advice for Carrie?
Sure. Thanks, Carrie. So the third P in the roadmap is planning. And I think this applies very much in your case because you're at a very important inflection point in where you are. And you have an opportunity to create a source of cash flow in retirement that may be in addition to your pension plan. But it really would be, I think, wise for you to develop what I call a financial plan. And you may or may have one in the back of your mind, but having a written financial plan is so important at this stage in your life, whereby you can actually work with someone who will project out how much cash flow do you really need to sustain that work optional life that you desire. It may be more or less than you actually think, and then be able to work backwards to figure out how much money you need to be able to make that happen. And if the money you need to make that happen is actually what you currently have available, great. If not, you might want to look at other options, like you said, downsizing, and using that capital to create that source of monthly cash flow. You know, one thing that we do find that investors in your stage of life are considering is harvesting some of the cash that they're getting from a sale of a particular real estate and using that to invest in things that provide, one, some liquidity. What does that mean? It means the ability to turn it into cash flow when needed, i.e. sell it and have it available ready. And two, regular cash flow, like dividend growing investments. And I remember back in 2008, 2009, when we experienced a great financial crisis that's sort of top of mind for many investors. And that was a time where there was also some chaos and fear out in the markets. But it also presented an opportunity. And I think this is where investors with a framework of being able to see past the chaos and, you know, seize the opportunity can take advantage of opportunities to have and buy investments that provide steady cash flow, like dividend paying investments perhaps, or other types of cash flow generating investments that are not necessarily within your immediate familiarity. So that is broadening your perspective by listening to radio shows like this, reading different books, or most importantly, surrounding yourself with the right people and advisors to help you make some of these informed decisions to keep on that right path.
Let's go to Deborah in Victoria. Good afternoon, Deborah.
Oh, good afternoon.
What's your question?
Well, I'm one of those almost retirees who is afraid of running out of capital before running out of breath in life. I live in a beautiful city that has very old real estate inventory, And so I live in a condominium that is 40 years old and needs a lot of work. And I'm a couple of years away from retirement. I'm very nervous about having special assessments and expenditures that I can't even imagine today, you know, just after retirement. And I'm not sure what my choices would be at that time.
Miley, any advice for Deborah?
So it sounds, Deborah, like you're really juggling some different choices to how to use your money the most effective way and make it last as long as possible. I would introduce the idea of thinking about all of your money, if you will, as sand in a bucket, okay? And this bucket of sand has a lot of holes in it. it does for all of us, okay? And the goal for you is to think of this sand as ideally, you know, growing for you, because over time, the holes in those buckets are going to increase. And what I mean by that is holes in the bucket include things like taxes, spending on, you know, renovations or going out and buying groceries for your car, etc. And as we get older, things can crop up as unexpected expenses. So as you make your choices going forward, I want to visualize the idea of how to close the holes in the bucket in such a way that allows you to build up the sand in that bucket and make it last longer. Again, it comes back to thinking about your purpose for the money, what's most important for you in terms of priority, and then thinking about and realistically applying who in your circle of trust is going to help you make these decisions, and preparing for the fact that people these days are living longer. So you want to plan for a longer lifespan than what statistics have shown in the past. So when we project out for clients, we look at, you know, 90 to 95 at least.
Let's go to Alan on the line in Vancouver. Good afternoon, Alan.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm in a slightly different situation than most of the previous callers. I am past retirement age at the present time. I am 69. I am not fully retired. I'm still in very good physical condition. I'm an athlete involved in a number of different sports. And just recently, within the last 2 years, I was able to do away with $25,000 worth of personal debt. So I am in the black for the first time, probably in about 10 or 15 years. I'm self-employed in an artistic area as a photographer. As a result, I do not have a company pension. I have a government, CPP, and an OAS, but that is probably about it in terms of what's coming in from an outside source. I do have been able to create some positive cash flow in the last 2 years, which has resulted in some money in the bank, which is at the present time, of course, doing nothing and gaining nothing. So I need some advice.
All right, Alan. Miley, what's your advice?
Well, first off, congratulations, Alan. It sounds like you're really living that active retirement lifestyle that so many of us dream about in terms of that work optional life. You're doing what you love, you're active, you're healthy, and you're living a wonderful life. Well done. And I think it's so exciting because you're thinking and asking all the right questions. And that's exactly why I wrote this book, Smart Risk, Invest Like the Wealthy to Achieve a Work Optional Life. Because so many more of us are living in that way and looking to achieve that. I think in your situation, you know, thinking about how to use that money in a way that's going to create long-term sustainable cash flow for you would be a very wise route to go about. You know, sometimes it means shifting our perspective. You know, we tend to migrate towards things that we're very familiar with. We just take a natural sense of comfort of doing what we've used to doing. And hence, you know, holding all the money in a bank account that's earning very, very low interest often seems like the safe thing to do. But sometimes what we think is safe is actually holding us back. And in many parts of the world now, we're experiencing for the first time in a long time, negative interest rates. What is that? It means you actually pay to keep your money in the bank. Actually, 37% of global sovereign wealth is now at negative interest rates. Now, they don't exist here in Canada yet. Hopefully not. Hopefully not ever. But it really reflects the price that people are willing to pay for certainty. And that cost of certainty these days is very, very high. So the whole idea of taking smart risk is really about stacking the odds in your favor to really step outside the comfort zone a little bit and be able to take informed steps to actually be able to put yourself in a much more deeply rooted state of financial strength and safety. That's what I think for you, Ellen, would be really useful. And, thinking about all your decisions from both the risk but also the reward, not just being too focused on just the risks.
Let's go to Audrey, who's on the line in Vancouver. Good afternoon, Audrey.
Hey, thanks for receiving my call. Hey, Miley, I've actually read your book, Smart Risk, and the 5 P's are awesome. They really help guide me to making better decisions financially. I have a very specific question for you. My parents, they're getting older, and their house is worth millions. They're asking me for advice, and I'm wondering what is the best advice I can give them now?
Well, thank you, Audrey, for reading the book and for your question today. You know, I think for your parents, thinking about selling the family home is a major decision. And it also requires, obviously, thinking about where they're going to be living long term. A recent survey in Vancouver showed that 39% of British Columbian millennials are expecting to inherit about $300,000 or more, but only 12% of parents actually anticipate being able to make that happen. So there's clearly a mismatched expectation out there in terms of how much money is going to transfer. Even if your parents were to sell the house, who's to say that actually would get to your generation? Because in reality, retirement is more expensive and people are living longer. So we are seeing in various surveys, and CIBC recently did one also across Canada, that showed that there is expected to be a lot of money transferring, but it may actually not result in as much as people had hoped. So I think it really involves a few things. One, sitting down with your parents to map out what it is they see as their key priority in their plan and what's their purpose for that money. You might be surprised. They might be thinking of writing a check to a nonprofit or some other cause before it gets to you. But it's important to have that communication up front. Two, I think it's worth looking at the financial plan and how much it would cost for them to maintain their lifestyle, and planning again out 30 years or so, depending on their age. And then working backwards to see how much they could afford to bestow upon the next generation. And that way you would have a better idea of what you can plan for in your financial plan. And just having that open dialogue and communication will work wonders in terms of helping put you both in, again, a strong financial foundation, and also preserve a wonderful relationship as your parents and yourself are on the same page working towards a common goal.
Audrey, does that help?
Thank you. Yes, very much.
Thanks very much for the call. Miley, you've mentioned low interest rates, and you've mentioned making obviously the title of your book, Smart Risk. But the things like Brexit, the possibility of a Trump presidency, a splintering EU, what effect do you see those having on people's investments? Should people be concerned about that, or should they take the longer view? Or how do you weigh those factors into your decision making?
Well, yes. I mean, I think that these types of events, Brexit, oil prices, Trump, all of these events raise volatility and heightened awareness about some of the things and the uncertainty in the markets. Yet uncertainty is a part of life. And I think some have more tolerance for that than others. And what happens oftentimes is when there is a big event, it creates a lot of noise around the issue and creates a knee-jerk reaction in many of us to want to do something to resolve that pain of fear. And I think one of the keys about smart risk investing is about the idea of not trying to be so reactive, but yet be more proactive, and also the idea of allaying this desire for instant gratification of making yourself feel better by doing something that might hurt you in the long run. An example is that in Brexit, we saw how on the day of the announcement and the following Monday, markets sold off, an extreme amount. In fact, on that one day, some markets were down as much as 10%. And yet what we've seen since that is, markets have actually recovered a lot of the losses that they experienced in the first couple of days. That's not necessarily to say that everything is smooth sailing in the overall economic landscape, but rather that, those who might sell right on that knee-jerk reaction could now have be in a much more difficult situation trying to buy back in. And so it's really about building those plans around a sound, dynamic, and adjustable and adaptable investment plan ahead of time, so that when these shocks do occur, instead of being on your heels and having to react or dealing with the emotional response, you're actually in a different mindset, a different perspective, whereby you might be able to go in and proactively pick up really great, high-quality assets at a discount price and enjoy and reap the dividends for years and years to come.
Miley, we have to leave it there. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Miley Wong is a financial advisor and author of the book Smart Risk, Invest Like the Wealthy to Achieve a Work-Optional Life. Congratulations to Heather in Vancouver, Carrie in Vernon, Deborah in Victoria, and Alan in Vancouver. You've all won copies of that book.